The discussant is Professor Victoria Curzon Price. Victoria Curzon Price taught a long time at the University of Geneva. Her areas of interest include international trade, economic integration, institutional competition, and political economy. And she's a former president of the prestigious Montpellerin Society. She was the president from 2004 to 2006. And in 2004, she published a book on Europe, Global Interactions, something like that. I don't remember exactly the title. Victoria, you have the microphone.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you, Bruno Leone Institute, and also the paper givers, and Mathieu, for, you know, improving my knowledge, raising my level of knowledge on this vexed question of what to do with our banks. Let me start, as I should, by saying that I find it interesting and useful paper. It spends a lot of time on definition and description, so it's pedagogic, it's instructive. I note also very carefully work in progress on the top of that, which I think is right and proper, because I'll be very happy to put my annotated version over back to you, because, you know, at one moment it will be published, and of course it will have to have quite a lot of work done to it. It's definitely work in progress. It seems to me that it lacks a bit of contextual depth. It is there as a description of, you know, telling us that banks should be allowed to go bankrupt, basically, and that it's not as bad and as upsetting as we generally think, and that one shouldn't really take this. It needn't have the systemic risk that appears to motivate a lot of bank intervention. And Mathieu, I think, makes the case convincingly that what starts out as a small intervention saving a particular bank in no time develops into something really big and costly, and the taxpayer has to foot the bill, and it gets out of control very quickly. And I find the discussion also very timely, because we are living at the moment through a major a systemic banking crisis of large proportions, just because back in 2008-2009, some one or two banks were not allowed to go bankrupt, and then compounded with all sorts of other things, which of course in the contextual part of your paper, which is not there, would have to be there, and all the regulatory responsibility for the banking crisis. But that's not the subject of your paper. So, but I do say that as it's not yet in a publishable form, because it's just not yet contextualized. Let me say what I thought was very interesting. Okay, I like the idea. the too big to fail, of course, is part of the problem, and one of your arguments for saying that one shouldn't take this argument seriously is that nowadays all banks are saved, which I then converted into a new slogan in my notes, saying that no bank is too small to be saved, and this sort of is worrying, because if you talk about bankruptcy as a dispute resolution process, which I think it's nice, that's a nice way of putting it, and that it shouldn't be seen as a morality play. That's your second point. But I think, again, in this question of contextualization, you forget to mention that the reason why we need the occasional bank failure is precisely to keep the system on its toes and to sort out the good decisions from the bad on the part of the bankers, right? And the fact that no bank is nowadays too small to be saved is worrying, because that means there's no sorting mechanism left. Then I noticed that you discussed, of course, central banks and the lender of last resort. And I note somewhere this has been converted nowadays into lender of first resort. There is nothing. The central banks are there, and that's this, their function now is to be the lender to the system. And of course, we all know that one of the big problems is that the banks lend to governments, and the governments lend to banks, and the mountain of debt is piling up, and the control mechanisms don't seem to be there. But all these things are latent in your paper, and will have to be sort of teased out more carefully. I like the small, I forget, on page 13, you make the point, and I'm sure it's correct. One would have to make sure that, you know, you can back it up with more than just one or two examples, is that the longer a bank is kept on life support, the more it costs the taxpayer. And that this is part of the sort of self-fulfilling prophecy problem, that you start out with a small bailout, and before you can turn around, it's become a huge problem, and you can't go back. I also thought it interesting that you include monetary policy itself as a bailout mechanism, and I think that is so true for the present crisis. You can just see the quantitative easing in the UK, in the European Central Bank under Mr. Draghi, the Fed, to go back to the previous paper this morning, without being told by the politicians, the central banks are now sort of preempting any possible bank failure by pouring money into the system in the hope that somehow they'll use this cash to recapitalize and we can somehow live to see another day. And this is a good example of kicking the can down the road and just hoping we get through to the next week or so without a disaster. And this is what monetary policy now is about in the developed world, it seems to me. Kicking the can down the road. And how long can we do this? Perhaps a very long time. We think that inflation is there waiting for us at the end of it, but in a sense, there's a horrible inevitability to all this. Let me think. I've got lots of notes all over the place, but let me also say that I'd like to return for a minute to the title, Bankruptcy, Why Are Banks Treated Differently Anyway? And in fact, I'm not sure that you actually get to answer that question.
It's more how banks are treated. Yeah.
Yes,
it's more how than why.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And that if you were really to answer that question, you would have to include the political economy of banking regulation and how the banking industry has clearly captured the ear of government all over the world, to the point where no bank is ever going to be allowed to go bankrupt, where everybody's saved all the time. they are treated differently because they've managed to convince, I don't think they haven't convinced anybody of anything. They're just very powerful, and they have the ear of government, and we're living through this sort of capture, regulatory capture of government by the banking sector, the big banks. And the latest incident of this is, in fact, what's happening at European level with a banking union treaty, which is about to put banking supervision of the big banks, the systemic European banks, I don't know how many there are, into the hands of the European Central Bank, as if it didn't have enough work to do, right? And so it's going to supervise banks, it's going to assess banks, it's going to regulate. Ooh, I don't think they've got a big enough headquarters in Frankfurt. They've got to build perhaps two or three big buildings still to house all the bureaucrats that they're going to need to do this fantastic new job of supervision. So it's happening before our eyes, but it's all captured. Perhaps I'll end by saying that, remember, the theme of this year's seminar for the Bruno Leone Institute is failure. Okay. And So the lack of failure in the banking system is leading to a systemic failure of the monetary system, of the economy. So where we go from there, I do not know. Is it a negative black swan? It's a sort of unbelievable event which is unfolding before our eyes.